You know, working at a church, you know, we're constantly getting questions from people about who's God, you know, or questions for God. You know, the problem is we have those questions too. Everybody's always had questions for God, you know, big time questions. Big questions like, you know, what's my purpose on the planet? You know, or, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? I have the question, why do good things happen to bad people? But that's my own question. But my own kids even have questions. My 8-year-old's all the time, he goes, Dad, where's heaven? Well, buddy, I don't know if it's really a physical place. Of course, the galaxy's really big. It could be a physical place. And he goes, hey, you work at a church. You're supposed to know. He says to me today, he goes, Dad, why does today, on the way to baseball practice, Dad, why did God give us a belly button? I don't know, son. Dad, you're supposed to know. You work at a church. You're such a lame pastor, is what he's thinking. We ask the questions, but let me just be honest. It's just the few of us in this room. Is this, is if you could ask God like one fun question, just one, you know, ask the big one, just a fun question, what would it be? I asked some folks, and one guy says, roaches. God, what's that all about? One guy said, what do people say to God when he sneezes? Sit with that one for a while. And my buddy said, why do you let jean shorts happen? Very, very, very important question. Well, since the beginning of time, people have been going, God, I've got a question. I've got a question for you. And 2,000 years ago, there was a group of Christians had a question for God. They lived in a city called Corinth, and it was a big metropolis city, but they lived in houses that were small houses really close to each other. They didn't have a church, so they meet each other's houses. And so, and they're brand new to this whole Jesus thing, and they're really trying to figure it out, and they came up with a very important question for God. And the question was this: God, can we have sex? And so the way that they would get the answer to those questions back then is they would write to a guy named Paul. And Paul, some of you know, wrote most of the New Testament. And so they would write to Paul because God spoke through Paul. So they sent a letter to Paul. And one of the questions were, Paul, is God okay with us having sex? Now, fellas, can you imagine waiting on that letter to come back? You got to know those guys prayed more than ever. You know, I don't know. I just always got to thinking, how did they get the letters, actually? You know, I know they wrote back and forth. Did they hang out by, the mailbox? Did they have mailboxes back then? Did they have, postmen on camels? I don't know how that, worked. But one day, the letter came. And I don't know who decided that they got to read it. They probably had a fist fight over it. But somebody got to read it. And they opened up. I need to let you know, this is not the original letter. And it actually comes from the Bible. So this is not, you know, the actual letter. It is a letter from Paul to the people of Corinth. It's called 1 Corinthians. So just so I want to clear that up. So they send a letter. Guy opens it up. And he is scanning for the answer. That's important. That's important, but later. Okay. All right. Sex. Oh, I don't see it. I hope it's not going to be in 2 Corinthians. Oh, no. Is it? Here it is, guys. This is for the Message translation. Now, getting down to the questions you ask in your letter to me. First question. Is it good to have sexual relations? The guy looks at him and he goes, he says no. Psych. He says, he says this, certainly. And the guys are like, I'm bringing sexy back. Okay. And then, what's the word that you hate to hear after you get the right answer? But, of course. Certainly, but, there's always a but it's got to be boring. But, we can only have it on leap year. But, we got to pray while we're having sex. So what's the but here? But what? Here's what he says. But only within a certain context. So they're going, okay, we can deal with that. Okay, we got the yes. Thumbs up. Okay, got the yes, but only within a certain context. All right, what's the context? He says, it's good for a man to have a wife and for a woman to have a husband. Yes. In other words, you can have sex in a context. What's the context? It's a marriage between one man and one woman, which in this culture was not always a given. One man, one woman. Can we have sex? We're wondering about that. He says, yes, good news. In the context of one man, one woman, it's good for a woman to have a husband. It is good for a man to have a wife. Marriage is good. Okay, he goes on to say this. This is why it's only marriage. He says, sexual drives are strong, but marriage is strong enough to contain them. He says, he acknowledges them. Sexual drives are strong. You're asking the question, yes, sexual drives are strong, but guess what's stronger? Marriage. Marriage can contain these sexual drives that just feel so out of control. So they're getting the yes. They're getting within the context of marriage. They're getting it because it's good between a man and a wife. And they're being told yes because this sex drive thing is so strong. It had to have a hugely strong context. And the context, the one and only context, is marriage. He goes on. But marriage is strong enough to contain them and provide for a balanced. The Greek translation of this word is hot. Provide for a balanced, hot, and fulfilling. Greek translation of that word is hotter. Okay. Provide for a balanced, hot, and fulfilling, hotter. A balanced, hot, and hotter sexual life. Now, watch this. Not boring, not leap year, don't have to pray. Yes, sex. Yes, in the context of one man and one woman, and yes, it can contain it, and within the confines of marriage, it can be phenomenal. Why? Because God designed it to be that way. He created you. He created marriage. He goes on to say, in a world, now watch this. This is where we connect. In a world of sexual disorder, in a world of sexual disorder. If you don't think, you know, well, I would say times have changed, but human nature has not. And he says, in a world of sexual disorder, if there's nothing else similar that we have with these people, is that they too live in a world of sexual disorder. In fact, it's why I think they were asking the question anyway. They'd just been introduced to Jesus. They come from a culture of I've got to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and if I do that, then I connect with God. And all of a sudden, somebody came in and said, no, Jesus, no, he wiped all that away. And if you accept him, then things change. There's a different connection. You are a new soul. You're connected with God forever, no matter what you do. There's joy and peace. And they're asking a question going, there's a dark side to this thing called sexuality. They knew there was a dark side of this. They had watched it destroy cities because it was in disorder, because it was out of context. They had watched it destroy the people around them. A lot of them had watched it destroy them. They knew that there was a dark side to it. They knew that when it was not in the right context, it was very, very destructive. And they said, can you marry those two worlds with what Jesus wants for us? Can we do that? And what he's saying to them, he's going, yes, you can have sex in the context of marriage. One man, one woman, it's strong enough even in a world of sexual disorder. In other words, have incredible sex life within the context of marriage, even in the world that we're living in right now. He goes on to say this. This is great. The marriage bed must be a place of mutuality. The husband seeking to satisfy his wife and the wife seeking to satisfy her husband. Some translations say it's their marital duty. I'm like reporting for service, you know? Marital duty. He says this. He says, the husband seeking to satisfy his wife, the wife seeking to satisfy her husband. Here's the deal. Just like every other facet of our marriage, what is God is always saying? Put your needs, your spouse's needs ahead of what? Your own, okay? So it's the same thing he's going. Put your spouse's needs, even sexual needs, ahead of your own. In other words, find out what speaks love to them in that way and love them that way. In other words, when we said, I do, we said our bodies are no longer our own. Our body, part of this is going to be sexuality. When we said, I do, we gave it the right to say, this is only my body. We said, no, no, no. We said, we're going to become one. And part of that was giving ourselves away. And he says, look, here's the deal. Your body is no longer just your own. It is your goal. It is part of you to satisfy in that way. It says, marriage is not a place to stand up for your rights. Marriage is a decision to serve the other, whether in bed or without. And here's the thing. We haven't talked about this issue before. One, because I didn't want to. And two, it's a little awkward. That's why I got this, paid this guy to do it. Number two is this. Here's what you and I know. People come in, oh, we're having issues with sex. And here's the deal. That's never the issue. It's a barometer of the relationship. We know that. But here's the deal. We know that intuitively. So that's why we can do it. And this makes the point right here. We know intuitively, guys, if we leave towels on the floor, make a lame comment, you know, we hear her come in with like groceries and you just pretend like she's not there and she comes in with like all the plastic bag with 74 cans like this. And you're like, what? I didn't see you. And we know later we've just shot ourselves in the foot right there. Here's what we know. He's saying, marriage is not the place to stand up for your rights. You know, it's to love and focus on each other. So it's not a separate issue. He makes the point not for us not to forget. And watch this. Abstaining from sex is permissible. My question is, who asked that question? The guys are like, who snuck that in there? Why'd you bring that up? And here's the deal. This is where it gets there's a twist here. They said, can we have sex? They would have taken, yes, kinda. And they got a yes, absolutely. Yes, in the context of marriage, of one man focusing on one woman, serving each other, putting their needs ahead of their own. And then he says, and here's the other piece of this. Abstaining from sex is only permissible. Now watch this. From sex is permissible for a period of time if you both agree to it, and if it's for the purposes of prayer and fasting, but for such, only for such times. Now think about that for a minute. He's saying, if you're asking about abstaining from sex, and you better be asking it because it's part of the equation. He's letting us know with this. This is part of the equation. Now think about it for a minute. He's saying, if you want this thing to work, if you want to have sexuality being the right thing in a world of sexual disorder, part of this thing is the abstaining thing. Because he says, it's only permissible during times of prayer and fasting that you both agree on and only for a period of time. I'm just telling you, that never comes up for us a whole lot. We're not going to have sex because of prayer and fasting. It just never gets that way. And he says this. He says this. He's saying, don't, double negative, don't not have sex. Don't not have sex. He's saying, not only can you have to watch even abstaining from this. And here's why. He says, then come back together again. Catch this. Yes, you can have sex in the context of marriage. One man loving one woman. Focus on each other's needs. And oh, by the way, this is the thing you cannot forget. Is sex is very, very, very important part of your relationship. In fact, you can only do it for a very spiritual reason. And that's only if you both want to. And then you got to come back together quickly. This is a big, big deal. He created sexuality to be a part of marriage. It's not an option, which is such great news. Then come back together again. Here's why. Here's why. Here's why. You got to throw this out. He said, watch this. Satan has an ingenious way of tempting us when we least expect it. Now, I don't know where you are with the whole Satan thing, but here's what we can both agree on is this. Is that when we focus our sexual drive towards someone other or something other than our spouse, it's destructive. And he's saying, when you abstain, what it does is this opens up the window for destruction. And if you're a believer, what it is, it opens up the window for the one that hates and wants to steal, kill, and destroy your marriage as a window to come in. Because your sexual drive is not something you put on the shelf. It's still there. And when you abstain, it opens you up to look at other people and other things. And right now, at the risk of being candid, pornography is one of the biggest ways that's pulling our focus away from our spouse. That's why we've created this thing called XWatch 3 as part of the online thing that you saw. You click on there, here's what it does. It sends every website that you've been on to the buddy of your choice. Just for accountability. Why? Because when we're focused, when our sex drives are focused on somebody or something else, it leaves a window for destruction, a window for Satan to come in and steal and kill and destroy what God has created. It's to be a hot and hotter, incredible sex with your spouse. It opens it up. And when we say, you know, I'm going to abstain as a way of punishing my spouse. You know, when you gave your body, when you said marriage, you gave your body away. It is no longer just your own. And boy, do we hate to hear that. We knew it going in, but as things get complicated, the pace of life gets complicated, we forget. And he's saying, yes, you can have sex. And here's the deal. You can't not have sex. You've got to let that be a huge part of your relationship. Don't neglect it. It says this. And I love this. It's like he stops himself. I'm not, understand, commanding these periods of abstinence, only providing my best counsel if you should choose them. It's the only place in the Bible that I can find that's a suggestion. Do you see what I'm saying? He's going, well, he comes back and he goes, okay, that whole thing I mentioned about prayer and fasting, that only time for abstinence, he goes, that whole thing, he goes, I'm not commanding that. Now think about that for a minute. He backs up and says, I'm not, the whole prayer thing, not, you got to both agree, and don't, I'm not telling you have to. Fasting, incredibly spiritual thing, a thing to connect us with God. He goes, whoa, 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 whoa. Let me tell you what's even more important to protect your marriage and control this thing in our world of sexual disorder, and it's called staying together. Be careful. And then he ends with this. He starts with saying yes, and here's what he ends with. Sometimes I wish everyone were single like me. A simpler life in many ways. Well, that's all toast for us. Okay. Because here's what we know. Marriage is complicated. But watch this. He said, but celibacy is not for everyone any more than marriage is. God gives the gift of single life to some, the gift of married life to others. He ends this. He starts with, certainly. Within the context of a marriage of two people focused on each other, putting their needs ahead of their own, protecting their marriage by not forgetting how important it is. And he ends by saying, "Don't that it is a gift." And you got to know the guys are taking the letter, looking at it, going, we just hit the lottery, baby. They said, we could, and don't not, and it's a gift. Good, good news. Now, the guy that I mentioned to you earlier, Mark Gunger, when we ran across his material and I watched it, we hit this place when he talks about sexuality. And here's the thing. Everything he says is based on this passage that you've just heard. And he talks way more candidly and specifically about this. That's when the lights will be lowered. But here's the thing. I will say this. Oh, I'm not sure what that meant. Anyway, you interpret it for yourself. He talks about sex in terms of the needs of a woman. Not the five. The needs of a woman. But here's the thing, guys. He never forgets about the needs of a man. I want you to watch this.
What I can do is talk about how to get to the number one key to incredible sex. And so my goal is I focus on the woman. So I try to get guys to understand how a woman operates and responds. In this this generation of all this sexuality on television and movies and porn and everything, you know, Desperate Housewives always portraying women as all these wild sexual creatures. And then you get married and it ain't like that for a whole lot of guys, you know. And they get freaked out. They don't understand why. What's wrong? What's happening? So we try to teach guys, look, this is what you need to be a lover to the girl. And most guys today don't understand that. And again, it's the way everything's pictured. I mean, have you seen any, you know, they don't have to be graphic, but any love scene at all in a movie or television, look at it. It starts out with a guy body slamming a girl up against the wall or on a table or something. That's how the scene starts out. And that's what everybody's doing. You know, in 35 years, I've never had my wife say, I wish you'd body slam me up against the wall. You know, and our poor guys, our kids growing up, they're going to think this is normal. You know, all this, you know, women who are just going crazy and nuts and stuff like that. Instead of men being lovers to women now, they expect women to service them. And it's quite the shocker.
But I think the stereotype that we hear is, you know, once you're married, is that women don't care about sex.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, again, we're talking stereotypes. Whenever you start, that's the problem about doing this whole marriage thing.
Sure.
Whenever you start describing men and women, you're always going to use the stereotype. And there's lots of people who break that. I mean, there's lots of relationships where it's the girl who's more interested in sex than the guy. You know, so you've got to just interpolate whatever I'm saying. But generally speaking, it's the man who's more interested than their wife. But guys are coming into relationships now thinking that she will always just, she'll be like me. You know, again, all guys need for sexual drive is oxygen. You know, and women are not that way. And what they don't understand is women have sexual desire in them. They all have sexual desire in them. But women are different than men. What they need is for a man to be a lover to her, to unlock the sexual desire that is in her. But they're not understanding that. And all the pictures of sexuality that we see on television portray women as being very aggressive sexually. Now, if you have a wife who's aggressive sexually, great for you. I hate
bless you.
You know, yeah. But I mean, most women are not that way.
Right.
They're different. It doesn't mean they're not interested in sex. It just means that they approach it differently. The first thing, women need romance. A lot of guys don't really need romance. They just need a couple of minutes. Women need romance, okay? And romance is not just reaching over to your wife in the middle of the night going, hey, you awake? You know, I mean, there's more to it than that for her. Again, in our culture, guys have lost this. They don't understand what it means to be romantic. It used to be men prided themselves in being lovers to women. You know, you go, I was reading from this thing in the Farmer's Almanac, 1890-something, you know. Now, you wouldn't think farmers don't usually come to the top of the list of romance. When you think of romance, you know, no slam on farmers if you're a farmer. To read how these guys talk to each other about how to kiss a woman, how to hold a woman, how to touch a woman.
I mean, farmers.
These guys, I'm telling you, this used to be the male culture. This is, you are a lover to the girl, to awaken the desire that is in her.
What does romance mean? I know for my wife, she's not a stereotypical flowers, candy kind of gal. But do you find that most women are, that that's what means romance to a woman?
I think more than anything, it means attention. And they want to feel special, you know, which is key. Actually, that's really what they want more than anything. Big money here. I'm about to tell you what women really want. Guys all throughout ages have wondered, what do women want? And this is important because most women don't know what they want. They know they want something. They don't know how to verbalize it. But above all things, they want to be chosen. That's the desire of their heart. For them, all of life is the junior high school dance when they're standing on the other side of the room hoping that some boy will come and ask her. Well, this is the one thing that she and her girlfriend celebrate on her wedding day, the fact that she's been chosen. Her friends celebrate with her and envy her at the same time. Oh, when will somebody choose me? You know, and that's what makes her feel so special. What a guy has to do is demonstrate to his wife, you know, I need to do this, but I'm not going to do this for a while. I'm going to be with you. And you got to actually say it. If you'll actually demonstrate, you know, I want to do this, but I'm not going to because I want to be with you or whatever it is, it demonstrates to her that you are choosing her. Every time a man does that, it makes her feel special and validated. The whole key of being a lover is to unlock and to awaken the sexual desire in a girl. That's really what it is. My wife will say, I'm not in the mood. I go, that's okay, you will be. Wake up in there. You know, I mean, it's about giving her that attention and being a lover to her. And for women who are the other way turned around, I mean, the truth of the matter, they got to do the same thing. They feel a little awkward because they have to be the lover to the guy.
Right.
And they think there's something wrong with them. Mm. You know, I'd say there's probably at least 25% of women, couples out there, where it's that way.
Wow.
Where they are really the strong ones. And they come up to me all the time and say, well, what about us? Well, it's the same truth. You just got to use it the other way.
Right.
And they feel like something's wrong. Well, how come I got to be the lover of the guy? How come he's so passive? Well, that's just who you guys are. It's fine. You know, just whoever is the strong one needs to be the lover to the other one, to awaken the desire. Now, who cares who initiates? Who cares who's the one who steps out first? It doesn't matter. I promise you, in my house, you're looking at the initiator. You know, I don't wait for her to initiate, you know. I'm sure we wouldn't have sex nearly as much. Foreplay. All right, touching the girl. So many guys don't understand that women, a lot of them, they feel much more sexually turned on when you touch them in non-sexual ways. Because they want to say, again, they want to be chosen. You need to learn how to touch the girl. It's all part of this being a lover again, awakening the desire in the girl. And I tell guys, baseball, big thing down here in Atlanta, right? You know, what happens to the guys who are always trying to hit a home run every time they come to the plate? What do they do most of the time?
Strike out.
They strike out because they're always reaching for the bleachers, you know. These guys have got to learn how to hit singles, learn how to hit a double, learn how to bunt once in a while. Don't always be trying to score with the girl. And you will find you'll start scoring a lot more if you'll play the game right. And I tell guys, I said, man, you want really great sex? Turn foreplay into a 24-hour deal. I call it slow roasting your woman. And it's great. I tell you, the best meals do not come out of microwaves, man. They come out of crock pots, you know. That sex drive is supposed to be your motivator. God is motivating you. Some of us feel more motivated than others, but God is motivating us to pay attention, to be nice, to be the lover. And you will find that you'll start succeeding a lot more in life and you'll be a lot happier boy.
Privacy. Why is privacy such an issue for women?
I don't know why. I just know that it is. You know,
why? Who knows why for any of this stuff?
But privacy is a big deal for women. You know, that sense of feeling safe. You know, I use the analogy in my seminars that, you know, if you have dinner guests in the next room, your wife probably won't feel like making love to you, you know. Most guys would have no problem with that, you know. Hey, there's Doritos in the cupboard, see you in a little bit, you know. I mean, you know, 2 minutes, be right out. They'd have no problem. But women aren't wired that way. If they don't get a sense that it's just you and her, it's hard for them to feel very sexual and turned on, which is a problem when it comes to children. I call children the anti-sex. Children can make it very difficult for a lot of women. It doesn't really affect many guys, but she just becomes very, the kids are there. Well, and I get it, and I try and get guys to be sensitive to it, but on the other hand, women need to get a clue. You can't just ignore the next sexual needs of your husband for the next 18 years. Don't worry, honey, they're almost out of the house. You know, it's not going to fly. I know a lot of women who are afraid that the kids might come in or they might sneak, you know. First of all, unless you're running around the house like Tarzan and Jane, swinging wildly in exposed areas, you know, which would be a little traumatic, I think, for Johnny to see that. But if you're under your bed, they don't know what you're doing, for crying out loud. You can still have great, normal, wonderful sex, even if the kids do happen to walk in.
Right.
You know, that's happened to all of us who had kids, you know. So you look up and say,
hey.
Well, hi. Well, hopefully, you know, it's a little decorum, and they're not going to know anything. And a lot of women unknowingly do horrible damage to their marriages during this time. I know women who ignore totally the sexual needs of their husbands, sometimes for a year, 2 years, 3 years at a time. I'll bet you anything. People watching this right now, watch it. Some of these guys haven't had sex in a year.
Wow.
2 years. Psychologists say that as few as 3 to 5 no's in a row, a lot of guys will begin to shut down sexually. Which, and we were just picking on the guys for not being initiators.
Sure.
It kind of goes two ways a little bit.
Sure.
Because if you're always telling them no, the guy will become discouraged. You need to let the guy know, hey, you can win with me. If you have a husband who argues with you about sex, consider yourself blessed by God. At least you keep it on the table. Mm. Most men will not. They begin to shut down. Then the girl comes roaring back to life later, and now he won't be the lover to her. He won't be the lover to her anymore.
Wow.
And it's changed the dynamic. I have women all the time, tears running down their faces. I did that to my husband. Now he won't touch me. What can I do? Mm. I just have him. Now you need to be the lover to him. Now you need to be the initiator. I said, well, I don't want it. I want to be like it was. Well, someone should have told you this a long time ago, but we're telling them now. But even having said that, she will still struggle with it.
Hmm.
And you just have to talk it through, because this is one of the keys. Like I said, these keys women need, this is one of them. She needs the sense of safety and privacy.
Right.
But guys need to be aware. I mean, especially during this childbearing years, the early time. And get a clue. The girl, especially with little kids, the girl is exhausted. You know what I'm talking about? But use that. You know, why don't you take the kids for a while? Let them peel your brain like a banana. It's a difficult time of life, but it's not an impossible time
right.
of life. You know, kids, you deal with them, it'll be great. The good news is they grow up and leave the house. The number one key is exclusivity. That's when one man focuses completely and totally on just one woman, making her feel truly special and getting all of his sexual input and needs met from her. Now, that sounds pretty simplistic, and in a way it is, but it's very radical compared to what we do in our culture today, because we live in a culture that says the key to great sex is lust. One of the reasons why men are so emasculated emotionally today and psychologically is because of this onslaught of porn that we have bought into hook, line, and sinker, and it is ruining it for men. The key to breaking this is to be very honest about it, very open about it, and let's face it, most people don't talk about these things. Most churches, God forbid if we talk about any of this stuff. We want people to succeed, but we don't want to talk about it, which is a little formula for insanity. I validate the male experience. I don't think men are sick, twisted, broken individuals. We're just men. But in this area, men have raised the white flag and they have conceded. But it starts with this pulling back the covers and saying, hey, this is insane what we're doing. If you doubt what I'm saying, just try it. I tell men this all the time. You know, because people go, oh, I don't know if that's true. Try it. Try it for 30 days. Anybody can do anything for 30 days. Just you and that woman you're living with, and see if it doesn't change your life. For 30 days, I guarantee you, you will start having the best sex of your life, and it is fabulous. Now, women need to get part of the program. You need to let that boy, hey, you can win with me. You got to treat me right, but you can win here.
We have a lot of people, I think, that come to our church or anything we're doing for married couples. And I think if they've not been around the church, they think that Christians don't have these issues that we've been discussing here, that we care to
imagine. Christianity does not mean you don't have these issues. But Christianity, the edge up on it, is God gives you the strength to endure these issues. That's an advantage that Christians have that non-Christians won't have. When they're miserable, they're overwhelmed. Mm. Now, if you're a Christian thinking you should never be miserable, you should never be frustrated, you should never be angry, you should never want to strangle your husband to death, you should, you know, and then when you feel like that, you think there's something wrong with you. No, 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 there's nothing wrong with you. It's just that the gifts of the Spirit allow us to succeed and work in the midst of troubles. That's the real beauty of Christianity.
You know, I've heard you say before, and I loved it when I heard you say, that Christians should be known for having great sex.
Christians should be known for great sex, absolutely. I mean, people, they know who Christians are and what we believe, and some love it and some don't like it, but whatever they think of our theology, they all ought to envy us for having the best sex lives on the planet.
That guy's a trip, isn't he? He scared me many, many times. That is quite the edited version, let me tell you. Just a great guy. What if we should have him in for a weekend or something, shouldn't we? He is a great guy. Yeah, I've never done that. I'm probably just got myself in big trouble. All the producers are going, no, stop it, stop it, stop it. But I will say this. Here's the deal, and I love his last line there. They should be known, Christians should be known for having the best sex on the planet. Here's the deal. Why? Because God created it. That's why they should be known for it. And here's the deal. We just want to end, let you walk away that sex is a gift. I know for some of you, it's hit different points with you guys. Not some of you just, you're going to come out sideways in your car to get home, you know, just because you like what they were talking about. The other of you are just going, I heard some things maybe to think about that I know for some of you, this was really, really tough. And our hearts are there for you. You can just go online and click on the site, again, Next Steps, and it will take you some great, great people that want to love on you and help you to figure this whole thing out. But right now, I just want to pray for you guys, and then the band is going to sing us out, I think. God, thank you, thank you, thank you for tonight. Thank you for every couple in this room and how you got them here and how they got invited or whoever they invited or just come as a couple. God, thank you for that, and we know that that's not an accident. And God, I just pray that, you know, in this issue that's so complicated and it feels so complicated or so confusing sometimes, God, we just want to accept that it's a gift, that our world makes it seem dirty or weird, but for you, it is, from you, it's a gift in the context of marriage. And we thank you for that. And thank you that that we can always go back to you and you're the first place we need to go with anything, God. But thank you for loving us. Thank you for the gift of sex. Thank you for the gift of each other. Pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.